things I found savvy, what's that Barry Norman thing, what people calling in about various characters, is how people take you to be real people and the threats about what is happening to them in the series. I find it such a sad thing that people don't take things so seriously. And obviously there are more important things than to be involved in.
The strange thing at the end, perhaps the most depressing thing about it, is that it's life created as a spectator sport, boring life created as a spectator. All sports or all sorts of entertainment created in capitalism under the commercial system as they are a spectator thing, things that you can just pay cash for. Sit in front of and you're enjoying yourself, or you're just kind of sitting in an armchair and you're watching television and you're enjoying yourself. Capitalism creates a lot of that, a lot of passive pleasure, but it's even worse when what you're being passive to is just sort of mundane, boring, and you're watching other people with their problems. It really is a testament to the misery of capitalism, the sort of perversity of pleasure that this system creates, where the actual form of relaxation that is open to most people is to sit at home and watch other workers getting trouble with their problems. But I think that's probably one of the most depressing aspects of the pleasure, the purported pleasure these programs offer. That's what I think B.H. Lawrence referred to as being anti-life art.
What do you actually think about the presentation of working class life in programs, for example, EastEnders? If you look at the activities those people have engaged in a relatively short period of time, you've got prostitution, drug taking, Mary's a stripper. Just the whole way, it seems that it's presenting working class life as rather sordid. And you've also got characters like Dr. Legg that comes in and gives a little sermon about what people should be doing, as though the rest of the characters are sort of too stupid to know how to conduct their lives.
Yeah.
Plus, it's not an accurate portrayal of the way in which a doctor engages in the community itself. I've never ever known a doctor that come in a pub and sort of do walking around the street helping people in the time.
Yeah,
that's
I did in fact actually write down. I didn't see it outright the last time, just because I was going over my time. But I did write down on the notes that I've made to refer to a point, Brian Rubin's point on prostitution, villainy, and so on. I did have that down to make the reference to the last point, because I think that is one of the things that is one of the editorial distortions which are made. And I think they do that. I can see more why they would do that, where they would take a slice of life and spice it up. They would actually put more action, intrigue and drama into a community than would actually happen. Well, I agree with that point. I agree with it when you made it yesterday. I don't particularly knock that though, if you see what I mean, because otherwise what would drama be? You would have half an hour, if it was just to present the mundane things that do happen without exaggerating it in some way. In other words, drama in itself is subject to all sorts of distortions and exaggerations. The fact that you're with someone for 2 minutes of their conversation, then you leave them. It's just like this sort of dramatic aside. The idea of one character comes onto the stage and says something to someone else, where really it would be audible to other characters who shouldn't hear it. But you accept that as part of the whole idea of drama, and I think that personally, I accept that sort of distortion as being something which drama entails. I never thought of EastEnders as being something which I could attack from that point of view. But it applies to all of them, doesn't it? Dallas, the Dynasty, the Colbys, these programmes where they show you inordinate wealth and power, but perhaps the average life, what I know about it, of people in that social status isn't quite like that. I don't know enough about that, how your average oil type would spend a day or a week to know whether that's accurate or not, but it's dramatic license to me.
Can we imagine what would happen if a character that we take seriously and sympathetically were to express the idea that what really we need is a total change of society, abolition of the money system, wages, total takeover of the means of production? It's perfect when you get past the first writer, let alone anyone except a paper. We know that. So I did.
You said to see Dr. Lego.
There's no way we're going to get that. And the point is, if ever it did happen, it would be a signal that the Socialist Party was about to dissolve. Because that would only happen on D-Day minus one, wouldn't it? So it might happen then. So I think this raises the question, what we do about it? This is always, I think, the most important point to consider. What are we going to do about it? Now, you mentioned Brookside. I don't think I've ever seen Brookside, but from what you describe it, it does seem that they are doing something, that they are stoking up a little bit of outrage, which is the very first step in the stage of becoming a socialist revolutionary, because no one who is satisfied with the state of affairs is going to even remotely consider changing it. It would be actually against it. And so our constituency is among those who are outraged. And if it can reach a few and make outrage seem reasonable, then power to its elbow, I think. And that's all we should, as the real radicals, have a right to expect from that sort of thing. But certainly, it means that it might present opportunities to us, to our writers and speakers and our media people, to relate our stuff to what is happening there, so we can just prod the outrage a bit further and a bit further until they're sitting here with us doing the prodding.
I don't think that anyone would imagine that you would get a socialist in one of these programs in the form that they take now. I think that would be, I certainly got a call from an advocate that that's what I would advocate or suggest might be likely to happen. You have the main character instead of being a bit of a rebel and a discontented worker who wants to change certain aspects of capitalism, who would be a revolutionary. I don't think that's likely. It would be interesting to see how they develop this character of Kelvin, how they manage to treat him, but I think they were all rebels in the past in this progress and this treaty, that someone who's just a little bit, it's the revolution, the person who wants to change things, look how wrong he's been sort of having to. I think it's naivety, isn't it? They're presented as people who have wanted to change the world, but haven't learned the hard realities of what capitalism actually is all about. That's the way they're usually presented. And I think that view would be like the idea of someone saying, well, what we need is we want one of these characters in Coronation Street or Brookside, that would change a lot of things. It's like the discussion we're having yesterday about how far socialist teachers, get people who are in teaching or something of that sort to influence people's ideas, how far that can change it. I think that's perhaps look at it, that's not a helpful way to look at it, because that's not where the change begins. I don't think that you're going to get a lot of, you'll get many people changing their ideas in that way, as a result of this character didactically coming out from the screen to Coronation Street and making all these offhand comments. So it would only be intelligible, if corresponding social change taking place at the same time in ideas with the audience. There are, on the other hand, views which have been expressed in Coronation Street, which is what I follow the most. I haven't seen any of this yet in the others, but things which are certainly quite encouraging to hear or to watch. I remember sitting in front of Coronation Street once, hearing Elsie Canat slagging off wage slavery. Now, wage slavery is a particular, it carries a particular sort of connotation to it. It's something a little bit more than saying work is boring. To associate wage, having to work for a wage, with being enslaved to the person who is your employer. Wage slavery, I'm not sure exactly when or who coined that expression, but it says a lot, it says a lot about capitalism, and it's encouraging to hear saying it. From time to time, comments are made, which I think are much sharper criticisms of the social system than others, sounding as shallow or making a superficial point. Others get much more to the root of what capitalism is all about. I think that's good. On the last point about Brookside, is it something which, or I think you would say it is something which we should take some encouragement from, because it makes think most people outrage that capitalism might not extract where he's saying that the book is what we've got now. There's quite a lot of that, but you know, that I can go on in books like, there's quite a lot of people are angry about. But the big deficiency with that is, how fast it changes our view, it changes general views to become socialist, is that what is it attacking? What is it that it's saying is outrageous? And what would someone who's quite so disinterested in politics, who looks a little excerpt like that, or sits through an average episode, think, be led to think about the social system? And in all the cases that I've ever seen, the outrage that you're supposed to feel is outrage at something which is a particular form of capitalism, you know, factorism, or free, and not the social system itself. And as we were saying, I think he's right, because he's got a left-wing bias, and the National Health Service is good. And a lot of it is almost all of it is approached from that point. But it's parts of capitalism which are being attacked. So someone who had the response of being shocked by it would be much more likely to end up, you know, saying, oh, well, I'll vote Labour next time. You know, some major mistake, political mistake, and that's all, I think, and to generally change things.
Well, that wasn't my last point.
Sorry.
But my last point is, what are we going to do about it, and how are we, as propagandists, to latch on to what is being done? Because something is being done, and if you're not going to get a wholesale, you just agreed to start with it, we're not going to get a wholesale criticism of capitalism. Of course you're not. I mean, once that is done, we'll be having socialism tomorrow. So we can't expect that. There's nobody just sitting waiting for that before we decide that it's worthwhile. We're going to pick the bones out of what they've got, what is useful, and any kind of criticism surely is useful. Criticism of capitalism, even any part of it. Surely we can latch on to it. And we do it in all the articles of the Standard very often, that we criticise certain aspects of capitalism. And point out the cure. Now, as we've got something here which is reaching a huge audience, it's very powerful, very popular, is there no way in which we can...
Well, I think the answer to that is that's not standing up for it. Yeah, I think the answer to that is this is it. This is what we're doing. We're running meetings. This is the idea that you know, attract put back on 7 million people, and you know, some of them are here today.
Is it worth it to go watch
for books,
and see if you can get again, see what happens. Interesting to see.
We have contributions about the church. Sandy, you wanted to make a point.
Several points. First of all, this character, Dr. Leng, who I haven't come across, sounds to me as if he might be being fair here, be a bit of a frat, rather like the vicar in Emmerdale Farm, was it 10 years ago, who spoke for about 2 minutes and said absolutely nothing on one occasion. He was one of these liberal churchmen, and I mean, that I think says enough to come on with. One aspect of these, certainly the radio soap operas, that they can, I think, even more in the case of radio in some respects than with television, where the actual sort of visual interest has, I mean, there's a difference between, if it's a radio thing, you've actually got the possibility of putting over a straight linguistic message, if you see what I mean. And there's no visual distractions or anything. Obviously the radio program has to be important, but you've not got that added complication. And you know, my mother used to say this to me about the art shows, that these programs which I've put out to make, quite often to make moral points, like the time when Polly Perks lost her baby and things like this, because somebody, when they were sitting in the shop, somebody came in and attacked, held up the shop and attacked her, and you know, she ended up losing her kid. And this was supposed to be, this was supposed to be pointing some great lesson of life out to the people listening to the art shows. And of course, it's always been used, even up to the present day, when the actress has actually become if you can talk of such a thing, an improved program. It's always been used by the Ministry of Agriculture as a sort of vehicle for reading out ministry handout. So, I mean, it's a sort of extension of the BBC's farming program. I don't know, at this point about social characters and soap operas, well, First of all, I think I would agree with the point that sort of rebels of one kind or another are usually presented in a certain way, and well, of course, everybody disagrees with them to start with, or disagrees with their extremism. And it's always, you know, a case of, well, they're either a bit naive and haven't learned the hard lessons of life or whatever, or they're a bit embittered and, you know, a bit twisted, you see. So, I mean, you couldn't take somebody like that seriously as a sort of contributor to political thought. I don't know that, I think Coronation Street has perhaps been better than some. And I mean, Gary gave an example of this question of wage slavery. I always remember Ina Shambles making a point about Peterloo in Coronation Street. I thought it was quite a good one, considering.
At the time.
Well, I thought that it was. She said she was in an argument with Annie Walker, and she made the point that, you know, Annie was quite proud of some relation of hers who was in the army. And she said something that. She'd never liked soldiers. She said she'd never been very impressed with soldiers. Her great-great-grandfather was killed by one of them just because he was asking for more bread for his parents, as she put it. Well, now, I mean, that's these are always points worth taking up. And I don't know that he could not get a socialist character of some kind. You see, how it would have to be done is another question. But I would agree that it's certainly not the most productive avenue to sort of pursue. And since John did mention the media committee, sort of obliquely, we did put a circle around the branches, suggesting, well, possibly a lot of branches here already anyway, that, you know, you could use television programmes as the basis for a meeting and, you know, have a more forum type of discussion on them. Well, I mean, you know, it sounds to me as if Brookside and Coronation Street particularly might form the basis for such meetings, and that's apart from what we're doing now, that's something more we could do about it. And, you know, articles in the Standard, etc., etc. There's a lot that you can do with so far in that respect.
Yeah, a couple of points occur to me on these soapboxes. First of all, I think there's a great deal of cultural snobbery attached to the idea of soapboxes. You mentioned it in your introduction. People don't like to admit to watching them. People who don't watch them feel that it's somehow superior not to watch them. In fact, and I'll speak dramatically, although this isn't a literary surface, so I won't expand upon it. I think that soap operas are actually some of the best produced drama that's been knocked out at the moment. In other words, the West End theatre at the moment is very, very bad. It's very hard to go and see a good play in a West End theatre, except for rather pretentious people who go time and time again to watch the plays of, you know, Shakespeare or other ones that they dig up time and time again to entertain people who really want to pretend that they're cultured. But soap opera, I mean, Brookside is very well acted, very well directed. Coronation Street is very good. You can't love them all together. You can't say, well, all, you know, I mean, I actually think, and indeed many people who write and work in soap opera would think, that you can't put Dallas and Dynasty in the category of being soap opera. There are many reasons that you can't, one of which is that they're only on once a week, and in fact, that makes them not really in the category of soap operas. They're much more what you might call a drama series. Now, you can't lump soap operas together, because you can go from, for example, Brookside and Coronation Street, which is dramatically very good. I mean, there's nothing on British television drama that is better than Brookside and Coronation Street at the moment in terms of acting, directing, script writing. On the other hand, you've got things like Crossroads, which is abysmally bad, and not to mention other ones that have come in to cash on the soap opera market, like Albion Market, and if you've ever had a chance, any of you, and it's not a chance you want, you'll probably be unemployed if it happens to you, to watch the afternoon soap operas, which are Australian imports on the whole. You know, if you really want to actually reach the kind of depth of, you know, dramatic badness, you want to go to Australia, and particularly the young operas, which actually makes Crossroads look of quite a high literary merit. And I've recommended various people watch The Young Doctors, but I think it actually is a sort of a, there's a kind of a pleasure when it ends, which is now, that's one thing I want to say, because I think the whole subject is wrapped up in that. Second thing I want to say is that very, very large numbers of people watch soap operas, therefore they are important. But you don't, in fact, I think there's a danger of looking at it the wrong way, but the danger of actually saying, what are the soap operas trying to do? What are the people watching them? How are the people watching them being affected? In fact, it's far more the other way. Television, I'd argue, works the other way. What happens is that people will make of television what they want, determined by what's going on in the rest of their lives. Soap operas are watched on the whole by very lonely, very atomized people who want a sense of community. Soap operas came about at a time when communities no longer existed in the old form. Therefore, people need to actually go and pretend that they're living in a community. It's something that capitalism feels very strongly it needs. It atomizes people, it puts them in a room on their own, away from other people. At work it tends to separate people, and so what it does in fact when it gets them in front of a television set is it says you're part of others and you've got friends and there's always someone there, and it's very reassuring. And a lot of lonely people watch soap operas and they gain a lot from it, and I'd actually rather have lonely people watching soap operas and gaining from it than doing some of the other perverse pursuits that they might do to overcome loneliness. It's quite a sensible way of overcoming it. It helps people to realise others in a predicament that they're in. The only other thing that I wanted to say about it was that if you ask the question, to come to the point made by John House sitting here at the back, which has been misunderstood, that is a sort of tradition with John Howe points at me, I might say. John Howe wasn't saying why aren't there socialists in soap opera, and indeed if you talk about that, if you look at drama that way, you in fact demonstrate something about your thinking which is very seriously wrong. You demonstrate a very idealistic approach to history, and in fact socialists are historical materialists. And what socialists would say, what I would say as a socialist, is that drama is not something which, as it were, it doesn't actually affect history. What it can do at best is to quite well reflect a particular contradiction that's going on in history, which it makes visible and clear. And if you can do that for people, then you're doing something which is dramatically and politically very useful. Now, there's a terrible problem which is blighted the whole of the socialist movement now is history, which is a problem which can broadly be called sectarianism. That is to say, there are people called the socialists with capital S, and they are going to go along and put a socialist in a soap opera. The result of this is that left, and even socialists when they tried it, have been incredibly bad writers. Socialists on the whole have tended to write bad plays, bad novels. There have been exceptions. Robert Noonan, writing under the name Robert Tressel, wrote a very good novel. If you look at most of the novels that came out of that period, and it's quite interesting, most of you here won't be able to think of any, but if you haven't heard of many of them, most working class novels in history, late Victorian, early and Edwardian Britain, have been pretty awful. The reason for that is it's actually very bad. Socialists tend to be very agitprop, tends to be a very bad form of convincing and artistically credible drama, it doesn't tend to be impressive. And I mean, I was told a long time ago, I was involved in what is the oldest left-wing theatre in Britain, Unity Theatre. We started in the 1930s and was the first theatre to put on Brecht in Britain. And when Dan Theatre burnt down at the moment, I worked with a resident writer with them. And the position that I was told by Unity Theatre, by somebody who knew a lot about writing plays, that if you want to go up and say something on an outdoor platform, say it on a bloody soapbox, don't say it on a stage and inflict it upon people who are in a theatre. I actually hold that to you. I think that if you want to be a good writer, you write about characters, you write about things that are funny. If you want to write comedy, you don't write comedy where just when people finish laughing, they have to sort of realise that they should have really been reading a pamphlet. What you do is you say to people, if you're going to show them a play, or if you're going to sing them a song, or if you're going to show them people who are interesting characters, you do that because it's entertaining to them. And what's entertaining to them is going to be determined by what's going on in the rest of their lives. It's going to reflect the class struggle that's going on around them. So I would say that perhaps looking at soap opera from the point of view of soap opera, rather than from the point of view of the audience who's really determining soap opera far more than you may think, is a mistake. Just finally on the point about Angie, I think quite wrong. The statistics that I've looked at, and in fact if you look at that letter to the British Medical Journal, which is quoted in the Sun and the Mirror and the Star, what you'll find is that the result of Angie attempting to commit suicide in East Enders, which incidentally I think is an appallingly bad piece of television drama, if you look at what happened when Angie attempted to commit suicide, what actually happened was that people changed the way that they started committing suicide. You didn't actually get any change in the number of suicides, except for the one that you quoted in your talk, which I haven't heard of. What I've heard of is that people started taking pills, which you did, rather than taking their life in other ways. The most common way for people to take their life in Britain, for some curious reason, is to stick their head in a gas oven. Very strange reason that the British seem to commit suicide that way, more than any other way, according to the information I have.
What is this?
I'm still not clear as to the point has been made, rather than just let it drop like that. What the criticism is of this view about the relationship between the audience and so forth. You said at one point that this is a very serious error to think like this. And I wasn't clear after what you said how John Howard misunderstood.
Well, I think it's not so much the point of being misunderstood, but I think John Howe was making a very good point, which is you don't, as it were, wait for the moment when the socialist walks onto the soap opera. What you actually see is that there are elements, in other words, socialism isn't a black and white thing. What we're talking about is class consciousness, that's the definition. A socialist is a class conscious worker. And what we're saying in fact is that there are degrees of class consciousness. There's very little indication, for example, that Diane Hunter, she'd been married 17 times, so one loses track of her second name, although Norman's got married, but Kelsey Tanner got married 7 times, 6 times a man called Tanner. So, it was a curious thing, that man called Tanner kept walking down Coronation Street during the 1970s. But the fact is that there's very little indication that the people in Crossroads have any degree of class consciousness at all. There is a considerable amount of evidence that their class consciousness is exhibited more in the characters in Coronation Street. If you go on to Brookside, even more, and then of course if you go into the Socialist Party, even more, because they're socialists. But even there you get variations, don't you?
Yeah, finally just on that point, I agree with that. I mean, that's why I cited that piece of evidence about isolated as it is about Elsie Tanner speaking about wage saving, because that's my view, that you won't have to have the difference either between someone who is a socialist parading up and down making all socialist comments at appropriate times and having no class consciousness expressed at all. But there is a degree, that's what I mean, agree with Elsie Tanner would come on and speak about wage slavery, so it's actually midway between the two.
Yeah. Can I come back?
Hang on a second.
I just want to say this. The soap opera, it's how you think yourself. It's how you can read into the soap opera. Without being a socialist, you wouldn't understand it. But it does highlight some of the difficulties, and all these facets help you to argue the case much better. Because you see facets that haven't occurred in your life, but you could realise they could occur. And this is, I think, it's the only way it can help. But it strengthens your argument for socialism.
Yeah, well, I mean, I really just wanted to say the point that made when I said it wouldn't necessarily be impossible to get a character into a soap opera was really related to what presumably John might be driving at and Steve has elaborated. You see, it depends how you do it. You don't, as Steve pointed out, have somebody coming reading the Declaration of Principles, because it would certainly not be realistic. I mean, I have the greatest difficulty, and I work for Partners Bank, and trying to talk about socialism to the people in there would be a bloody hard job. I mean, how would you start off? Half of them are racists for one thing, that work beside me, you've got quite a lot of barriers to overcome first. But I don't see it to be impossible to get somebody questioning the system in a perhaps a quiet way to start with. The point I'm trying to make is that if you were trying to get, just let's go to the extremes for a minute. And say that you were trying to get into a soap opera, you were trying to write into a soap opera, somebody who was in fact a member of the party. Now, what you would have to do was actually envisage that the circumstances in which this party member would actually be in the particular soap opera community. And how would that party member go about, you know, it wouldn't in fact stand up in the pub and, you know, blaze away at volume 1 and Capital, and you know the contradiction between volume 1 and volume 3 and others carry on. Such a person would have various ways of you know, you just have to think how you do it yourself in your pub. And various people have different ways of going about things. But I mean, just let me emphasise that that is not the. Let me just say again that I don't in fact see that as any sort of major way of dealing with this question. I mean, we're doing it now, and it's like anything else. It's everything is grist to the mill for the socialists. You do a meeting on soap operas, you could do one on comics or whatever. If you thought that was important enough, I mean, nobody is seriously suggesting, I hope, and I certainly don't think that somehow or other this is the vehicle that's going to do it for us. I mean, it isn't. Everything is has a part to play. As it were, all the sort of factors of culture.
I do find socialist arguments come up in my local, like a pub next door to me. It's very convenient because I meet all Mrs. Thatcher's personal pals in there. And they buy me drinks and I tell them about socialism and they have quite an interesting argument going on internally.
Yes, in relation to Steve's comment about the excellence of the novel Ready Travel Plan. First of all, that novel is enormously interesting as something, you know, that is entertaining. That's the first bit. And from my experience, the Rabbit Trouser Philanthropist, the novel, when introduced, for example, to people in the building trade, I don't know of any instance, one instance, where a more reactionary worker has reacted any differently to somebody that is sympathetic towards socialist ideas. In other words, when you lent the book to a member in the building industry, even although the story is depicted in a much earlier time, they all readily associate themselves with the whole of the story. And the characters in it. They recognise them straight away because that is what happens now even on building jobs. Now, the thing is this, that in relation to what Sandy has said about interesting people in socialist ideas and the approach that a socialist takes, when he says he's sitting beside people who, most of whom are racist and you don't know how to approach them. Well, I would suggest the way to approach a racist in that context is to suggest that he or she is racially inferior. Then you have an argument. You know, then you start to reach. So that I mean it's the way that it's done. Obviously you can't approach it by doing what we do as a routine, you know, the declaration of principles and all that. You can't do it that way. You've got to do it, as a matter of fact, the way it's being done now, today. I've found the what Gary has given us to be enormously entertaining and at the same time a wonderful stuff for stimulating ideas about socialism and about the way in which you approach people who are non-social.
Just saying that in the very last quote in the game is from Harry Churchill, who was like the Prime Minister, he covered in the saying that last 25 years very little change, and although people are slightly better off, but he's also got the same knowledge of the same problem and so on. And if you want to use that as a way of saying, here's somebody who actually sees things as they are, instead of using it as a way of saying, here's somebody who's very reactionary, he also said that people are just the same for the 21st century. Now, it seems to me that you could put another interpretation on this. You could say that here's someone who's seen through the veneer, which Catherine Martin gives to things, that people seem slightly better off, slightly more possessions, but they're basically occupated, have remained the same, they're worried about their kids' education, they're worried about losing their job at the next shakeout, and so on. And in a sense, if you've got people like this writing Reformation, although they're not thinking in terms of an alternative, within the framework of the present system, at least they're seeing the way things are, and hopefully that's been reflected in the programmes that are being put out. So you think you could put another interpretation on that approach?
Yeah, I do. I did put two interpretations on it when I first read it. And I stopped when I read it and I puzzled over it, because you can look at it either way. You're saying something which is provocative, I thought, the first thing. And then you think about it and look at it and again, and is it, what's the consequence of that? And if that's right, what's the consequence of it? The reason I used it in evidence for saying that he's, I don't mean it to be a reactionary, because I don't think he's that, but evidence of a certain perception or mentality that people like him have, or at least as is evidenced in that quotation. That of looking on society is not the particularly dynamic way that socialists do. I wouldn't particularly mock him. No, I didn't mean it as an attack in the way that I think actually you might think I did. I just think that you look at a quotation like that, an expression and opinion, you think, well, it could be other things. It could have actually been speaking about society changing, or the need for it to change, all sorts of things, which in a way I suppose would say is implausible, because he might not have been as successful soap opera scriptwriter if he'd have taken that and put those other revolutionary points of view from the beginning. You can look at it in two ways. I just thought that it expresses an idea about society not having changed and not being likely to, which if you just leave it at that, as he did, is a point of view which would run against anyone who says anything, who speaks with any hope or merit about the soap opera, which you give them, ordinary merit on the ground if they're changing to some things. So that's the way that I intend to use it. Yeah.
It's slightly different. How do you see the programme match very successful in America and quite successful in America? And that was a weekly time.
I used to watch that. I think it's still on now. I remember watching a number of Czech episodes of that. It's quite funny. I have an order in there. I find it quite funny. He's written scripts for other films, which is quite good. But you mean that his depiction of war and what the reaction to that is likely to be, how far that... I'm not sure is a straight answer to that. I mean, I've sat through films like Apocalypse Now, films which portray Vietnam as being... quite accurate, I think, as being the horror that it really was for people. I've been breaking over the record just recently, 19, about the talks to expose the terrors that the young man was had to suffer in that war. I'm not sure what the reactions that people is to that, whether it helps to fuel social change, because people are given a clearer picture of the absolute terror of war and the utility of fighting it, and the fact that war constricted into fighting it against your will, and these people aren't really your enemies, we don't speak to that. All of the points that socialists can make. That's my idea, I suppose. I mean, I know what my reaction is as a socialist. You know, you sit there and you think, yes, it's a bloody waste of human life, and look at these workers having to just point guns and go to most of it. What that particular, I'm not sure how it finds exposing in the map, I don't remember anything particularly.
ghastly being shown, as ghastly as it actually was being thought there, but certainly in other war films treating that subject, modern war films treating it, you see just what sorts of grotesque traps and weaponry was the result of, you know, human ingenuity of young people put to the engineering that they had to develop in order to survive and find the best ways of annihilating the enemy. And I think, you know, the reaction to that is people look at it and think, you know, surely we can be that, you know, that clever about killing people and poisoning them, trapping them, and all this sort of thing. I do think it filters through in that way, but nothing that I would set great store by, simply because it's very difficult to measure or to gauge the consequences of it. You know, I think, you know, it's the same theme that I think comes out of this, isn't it? As soon as you start to place any reliance on something which is uncertain, whose educative value is uncertain, and you say, well, it might be persuading people, and they hear us in town speak about wage slavery, or they listen to, they watch some particular event of capitalism unfolding in a way, it might or it might not. Once it becomes speculative like that, and a questionable education, that's the point at which I think it ceases to have any sort of any value. If you rely on that, then it's like, you know, it's like leaning on something you're not sure whether it's there or not. You might fall down if you just relied on that. There's no substitute for direct socialist propaganda for someone holding up evidence like this and then saying, you know, this is the way that we view the world, and this is the change that we want, and this is how you join and organise in order to change the world. Anything that falls short of that, vague lyrics or, films, as good as they might be, and educative value to educative as they might be, I think it falls short of the necessary sort of cohesive education for social change.
It seems to me that nearly every comment that's been made today has assumed the kind of the power of TV over people's thoughts, and how it can actually convince people of certain things. There was a programme on which was on this week or last week, which was about television, and it actually went into. They placed a separate camera in TVs in houses, and they filmed people watching TV and what they did. And not to my surprise, because it happens in my house, is that the TVs is switched on and people do all kinds of things in front of the TV rather than watching the TV. And the conclusion of that was a very good piece of research, academic research. The conclusion they come to was that TV has far less impact over people than the TV producers actually think they do have, and I think that's something that people should also keep in mind, as far as actually TV being able to change people's ideas, although obviously they don't have that.
Can I make a point that hasn't been made on this? I thought that was previous research incidentally on that programme, but something that some of you may not realise is the main censorship that goes on in writing television drama is not actually censorship to take out revolutionary ideas, as it were. It's actually censorship to take out the very anti-working class ideas that many workers have. I mean, for example, if you were writing for EastEnders, it would be almost impossible to write about an ordinary square in the East End where the characters were not very racist, rather like the people Sandy Easton works with. And in fact, that came through only once in any of the episodes I've seen, where the old lady in EastEnders kind of said, "Oh, we're black," you know, and so on. But generally speaking, that doesn't happen. Now, that's actually what's happening. I mean, what most of the people working in, I mean, don't have any illusions about it. Most of the people working on television drama at the moment are actually very trendy lefty people. Or rather liberal people anyway, who are very concerned to set high moral standards and political standards, and they want to keep racism out of television, they want to keep, so in fact, I mean, I think Steve Bassett's quite right, that, it's not a... television is not actually setting standards. What television tends to do is far more to simply reflect or edit out a few things. And the only other thing about it is it also... tends to have a negative function, which is that it doesn't allow things that you don't see on television disturb you when you see them in reality. That's something about television which hasn't been commented on, but I won't go into it as well.